Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and women's football expert Ella German and Charlton goal machine Lily Ag. It's been a fantastic tournament so far. Goals are plenty and Ella, England off to a flyer.
Yeah, I think on the whole it's a really promising performance. As I said this time last week, I thought it was going to be 1-1. I was very pleasantly surprised that I was wrong.
Saying you should be more positive.
I was very happy I was wrong, in fact. Yeah, on the whole, I think the first 60 minutes it was, compared to our warm-up matches, a promising performance. The likes of Bronze and Paris showing what they can do down the right-hand side. Really impressive, a lot of our players. Impressive Kira Walsh in the middle, pulling the strings, who I think goes under the radar sometimes, and Ellen White being the workhorse that she is up front. I think the only thing to flag up is that we weren't really playing to our potential in the last half an hour. We looked a bit leggy, a little bit jittery, and I think that's something we'll need to work on if we want to really progress in this tournament.
Lily, do you think that fitness is a problem, or is there a psychological wobble there?
So like I said, I was lucky enough to be out in France. I watched the game firsthand. It was a good game. First half was good. We got kind of, I think, you know, quite lucky with the VAR. Second half, we looked like we ran out of steam, didn't we? In the flesh as well, I think, being there, I was getting into the game. And for me, I think, you know, Nikita Paris was great first half, but second half kind of didn't really look to go forward even. I think she just took her foot off the gas and started passing backwards. And I think that kind of showed then throughout the team. And as you saw, we got a bit complacent, and then Scotland come at us. Luckily, it was a bit too little too late. But it was a good game, but a long way to go, I think, if we're going to win this tournament.
And Scotland, of course, have effectively blown it. They lost 2-1 to Japan today. Is Group D now a two-horse race?
Yeah, I think arguably it is. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I agree with what Lily said with Scotland over England, a little too late. It was a little too late again today. They showed what they can do. Claire Emsley getting forward, scoring a good goal against England. And today, Lana Cleland with a brilliant strike. But they just, I don't know, they just didn't, I don't know if the occasion has overwhelmed them a little bit. They've got the potential on their side, but they just didn't look quite up to it. So, yeah, you've got to say it's between England and Japan now. So next Wednesday's game will be very exciting.
And tonight's game for England, of course, is massive. They take on Argentina from 8 o'clock. Argentina defensively solid against the Japanese. A first ever World Cup point for them. Can England break them down?
Yes.
In a word.
Yeah, I mean, they had a good game against Japan. They did. You saw they were throwing their bodies on the line. They were rushing into tackles 50-50. They weren't holding back. And obviously, you expect that at a World Cup. But I think hopefully tonight we're going to just show our quality. Depending, I'm going 2-0. I think we will break them down and then again kind of keep the ball. And then I'm predicting that we'll get another one late on. I don't think they're going to cause us a threat going forward. But they will put their bodies on the line and defend well, I reckon.
And then 6 points for England, 4 for Japan. Are we looking at a top of the group qualification?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I think we want to as well. I think if we come in second, I think it's Canada or the Netherlands we would most likely face, which we don't really want. I'm not 100% sure who our opponents would be if we top the group. But also, just from a confidence point of view, I think to top a group that's got a side like Japan in there, who we lost out to in the semi-final last time round, runners-up last tournament, winners the tournament before, is a huge confidence boost for the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, I think that point about psychology is massive. Of course, last summer with the Men's World Cup, we had all of that absolute nonsense of, oh, we want to finish second in the group because then we're on the better side of the draw. Shut up, win the game of football and see what happens. Two sides who have been doing just that are, of course, France and Germany. They've both already qualified from their respective groups. How much of a threat are they?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, so far France have shown some real quality, starting off with a 4-0, made a bit of a statement, some good goals, some good play. You know, defensively they're solid. Renard had a bit of a moment the other night. She obviously just wants to score more goals. It doesn't matter what end. No, like I said, I think France and Germany going into the tournament are favourites, as long as, you know, as well with the USA. But France have got as well. It's in their country. I think that's a massive, massive boost for them, and that really will help them. And I think, yeah, they're looking good so far.
Yeah, I've been more impressed by France and Germany. I think, as Lily said, they've got the momentum of the home nation behind them, and they managed to grind out a good win against Norway, albeit with a slightly controversial VAR decision. But even with that Ronaldo goal, they still got there. Germany, I've been less impressed with sort of grinding their
quite
way
wobbly
around.
Against China. They were getting caught on the counter-attack. They actually could have lost that game.
Yeah, they don't look quite cohesive as a team, and now they've lost Marajan as well is a huge loss. I've been really impressed with Gavin, the young player who scored the goal in the first game, and she was an absolute workhorse in their most recent game as well. So yeah, I've been less impressed with Germany than France, but again, you know, I think looking back at past tournaments, you don't need to be recording spectacular wins to go far. Maybe, you know, you don't want to peak at the group stage. Maybe grinding out wins is all they need at the moment.
One frustrating little term that you've both mentioned already, and we're only 8 minutes in, is VAR. Has it been annoying you? What have you made of the quality of the officiating more broadly?
Gosh, so far I've been disappointed. I think, you know, referee and officiating is a massive part of the game. I watched, you know, the Scotland game earlier v Japan, and for me, the penalty that was against them, I think, was soft. Yes, she did touch her shoulder, but again, is that going to send her to the ground? She's a grown woman. And then for me, you know, Erin Cuthbert flicks the ball up and the Japanese player comes across, it hits her hand quite clearly, knocks it in the other direction,
and
it didn't. And it didn't even go to VAR. So I'm really struggling to work out now what is VAR doing, and what's the point of it if you're not gonna? Yeah, I don't know. I think it's causing more problems than not so far.
From a striker's point of view, are you just worried it's going to rule out goals?
It's a mix, because then there's also numerous penalties so far, and I'd love to take a penalty. So if it, if it happens, I'll be stealing that ball and taking a penalty. Again, it's one of them. I think there's going to be more goals, but then there are going to be more goals by penalties and less by open play, which you've seen at the minute already. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that makes it less exciting in a way. There's been some really frustrating goals ruled out through open play. In the opening game of the tournament, we saw Batty scored France's, what would have been France's second goal, but she was ruled offside. But I think her left foot was literally like a millimetre off. It was quite similar to Lingard in the Nations League semi-final, where they're only ever so slightly off that
no human eye is ever going to get it.
Yeah, and it doesn't give them any advantage.
Well, it's that phrase, clear and obvious. Mm. If it's his toe or his toenail, it's not clear or obvious, is it? One thing that was very, very impressive was, of course, that Australian comeback, 2-0 down against Brazil, roared back for a 3-2 victory. Kerr has been very open, saying we're not listening to any of our haters. How far can they go?
I think they have the potential going forward to go far, but defensively they've looked shaky. And I think that's something they're going to have to sort out when they come up against the bigger sides. We saw Brazil score 2 goals against them, go up into a 2-goal lead. So I think they've got the likes of Kerr and Ford going forward, but they're going to need to work on their defence to get anywhere.
Absolutely. And New Zealand, of course, very, very unlucky to concede a 92nd minute winner to Holland. Coming up, we'll be joined on the line by Rebecca Smith, former New Zealand defender with 74 caps, to get her take on the tournament so far.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and of course, Charlton goal machine Lily Ag, and football and women's football expert Ella German. I'm delighted to say that we are also joined on the line by Rebecca Smith, former New Zealand defender with 74 international caps. Good evening, Rebecca. Thanks for joining us. What have you made of the tournament so far?
I think it's been great. So far, the atmosphere in Paris is really good. We've had tons of people through our clubhouse. We've had some really awesome watch parties, had to kick people out some nights. and it's just been like a really good vibe in some of the cities I was up in, even in Le Havre. See, even that guy's cheering for France. No, it's been really cool. I think the only thing that I would have loved to have seen is a little bit more sort of attendance at the stadiums. There's some sort of empty spots in some of the games, and some of the stadiums don't look as full. But overall, I think it's been really awesome.
No, it has been glorious. I know, Rebecca, that you were born in Los Angeles. You represented New Zealand. And the USA team have been getting in a spot of bother because, obviously, they battered Thailand 13-0. Yeah. Some people have been less than impressed about the fact that they were still celebrating the 9th, 10th, 11th and so on. I know that you made your international debut against Samoa in a 15-0 win. Were you still celebrating towards the end of that one?
Yeah, look, you know, at the end of the day, they're at a World Cup. So if you were to score a goal at a World Cup, would you not celebrate?
I would, but if I'd scored 12 of them, I might feel slightly differently.
Yeah, but I mean, the goals that Alex Morgan scored were world class,
yes,
regardless. So I think if you score a world class goal in a World Cup, I think you have every right to celebrate. I think like some of the topic that's actually more interesting for me is that how come Thailand is not as prepared as they could be, and what kind of funding is the federation giving to those players so that they, when they arrive at a World Cup, that they're a world-class team as well. I'm not saying they're not a world-class team. I'm just saying that I think the preparations were really different. And I think if you look at, you know, how federations are supporting their women's teams around the world, that is more of a question that I'd like to look at, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, maybe the last goal and the celebrations don't need to be as exaggerated, but to be honest, I mean, if I were scoring the goal in the World Cup, I'd be celebrating regardless.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's a difficult situation, isn't it? I was talking to Ella earlier about it. I think you have different types of players, don't you? So some people I know score week in, week out, and they just casually walk back and celebrate, and that might be in their league and it might be in the World Cup. It depends. Others might score, you know, it could be even in your Sunday league, and they celebrate like they have won the World Cup final. So it's a matter of different people and how you want to celebrate a goal. And I think, you know, it shows what athletes, you know, America are actually, how driven they are to score, you know, the 13th goal, and were ruthless to even want to score again. And they do celebrate like they've won the World Cup. So I do feel sorry a bit for Thailand, but at the same time, it is a World Cup. And like you said, to somebody, that's going to be maybe their first goal at a World Cup. So it's a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah, and I also think that at the end of the day, goal difference could matter in that group. So if, you know, Sweden,
they're not going to be worried anymore, Bex.
Yeah.
13 well, probably does the trick.
Yeah, but if there's a tie between Sweden and the US and they win 14-0, then Sweden will go on as number one, which may actually be not a good thing considering they may meet France in the quarterfinals. But I think goal difference could potentially matter. And then also, I think I do feel sorry for the Thai girls as well, but it's not because of the US team. I think it's probably because of the lack of sort of preparation and funding that the federation and AFC has put in to the team. So yeah, for sure. But you know what was really cool was seeing Alex Morgan going and giving one of the players a hug, and Carly Lloyd going up to the goalkeeper at the end of the day. So, you know, they have a job to do, they finish their job, but then at the end of the day they're human as well. And I think that compassion,
sorry for giving
really,
you PTSD,
really nice. Yeah, exactly. I'm just really happy I'm not one of those Thai players, to be honest, as well, you know.
Rebecca, you mentioned Alex Morgan and the world-class goals she scored. Surely she's got one hand on that golden boot already.
Yeah, I think Alex Morgan is in top form. And I think what's been really class about Alex is I've seen her sort of progress through the years, played with her, against her for so long. And she even said it in an interview that she's never been, she wasn't always the best player on the pitch, but she's always wanted to. And she definitely is one of those that has an incredible work ethic, and she has become one of the best players in the world. So she's fought for everything that she's got, and I mean, she's just world class. Those finishes, it didn't matter who she's playing against, like there's no one that can stop those goals that she scored. So I'm super excited to see Alex, and I'm really happy for her as well, because she's such a really nice person.
Did you ever have to defend against her personally, Rebecca?
Oh God, you just talk about PTSD. Yeah.
So did you handle her? How did you attempt to lock her down?
As well as I possibly could, to be honest. No, you know what Alex does really well? She looks like a very nice person, but she actually, and she is a nice person, but on the field, she's ruthless.
Yes.
She's absolutely ruthless. So she will, like, jostle and jar you so that she's always in the right position at the right time. And I mean, she has an incredible speed, but her runs and how she positions herself put her in a position always that she's sort of a little bit half step ahead of you all the time. So you always have to be watching where she is and know where she is and have a hand on her so that she doesn't get in those positions that are right behind you and make those runs in behind you where you just like lose it for half a second. And she'll score every single chance you get. So you always have to be really tight with her. And just she's really good. She's just really, really good.
And you mentioned that she's nice. What is she like off the pitch more broadly?
Oh, she's a lovely person. You know, after they knocked us out of the Olympics in London in 2012, I went to, obviously, because I'm friends with a lot of the girls, went to one of the parties that they were hosting, and she made an effort to come up and just ask how I am and like was very complimentary of the New Zealand team and how far we've come in such a short time. And you know, those are the kinds of things that a lot of people don't see. They see her as an athlete and they see her, you know, working really hard. But she's just a really nice person. I really enjoy spending time with her. I don't know her that well anymore, obviously, because we've sort of been in separate continents for a long time, but still keep in touch. We also had an event recently, a 50 for 50 event with Copa 90. And we had her as one of our icons. We did an illustration of her and I sent it to her. And on the night she was following and sort of sent some messages saying, hey, how cool that event is. So cool what you guys are doing to help promote the women's game and stuff. So, you know, she doesn't have to do that. She's got like hundreds of millions of followers and people coming after her all the time in media. And she, you know, when she genuinely cares about something or she likes it, she's really happy to support, which is really cool.
Yeah, I've heard she's particularly popular with Thai goalkeepers as well. Of course, your New Zealand team, not nearly as bad a result as the one that poor Thailand suffered, but unlucky, I think, to concede that late goal to Holland. When you've clung on for that long against a team who's that potent going forward, did it feel a little bit harsh?
Really hard, really hard. I was gutted. I was commentating the game for ZDF, a German broadcaster, and I like was super stoked and ready to go with all my notes, and then the last second just felt really deflated. Obviously wasn't allowed to show it, but I really think the New Zealand team played really well the first half. They actually were dominant. They had more goals on shots on goals. They were disturbing the German team all over the park. They were not letting them get, I'm sorry, German team, the Dutch team, they weren't letting them get into a flow. And they had better shots on goal. So in the transition, they were pretty good. So I was really proud of them. I think the second half their fatigue showed a little bit. They dropped off a little bit. And Netherlands, like obviously with their deeper bench, so two of their subs that came in both made an impact. So I think that's where the difference is with the New Zealand team is they just don't have that depth of the bench that can come in and make those changes. When Shanice van de Sanden, who's one of the world's best players, goes off and the next one that comes in is the one scoring the goal, it's like, oh, man, you know? but I think they've done well, and I think they will do well. I hope they get out of the group. I really do. I think they would deserve it.
Absolutely. Best of luck to them. I know it's early days in the tournament still, but from what you've seen so far, who are you tipping to win it?
France, for sure, looks amazing. They've always been a top favorite of mine. I think per position, they have the world's best players, technically, tactically. I think their biggest struggle is their own mental strength that has always let them down in tournaments. The U.S., obviously, because they, and especially after that 13-0, they were proving a point, too. They knew it was going to be a game they were going to win, but they were out to actually mentally sort of jar everybody else, not just the Thai team, by showing their qualities. I think they really made a statement in that first match. And, you know, my dark horse of the tournament, I'm not saying they're going to win it, but I really think is going to go further than we think is Spain. And Italy looks really good right now as well. I think they've got some really class players. So those would be sort of my four teams to watch. England, I think, always is going to be looking good with under Phil Neville, all the preparation that.
Are you just being nice at this point?
No, I think England looks good too. But I like the underdogs of Spain and Italy, and then my top two would be U.S. and France. Yeah.
Wonderful. We've got a great tournament to look forward to. Rebecca, thanks ever so much for your time. Lovely to speak to you, Rebecca Smith, their former New Zealand international with 74 caps. Fascinating to hear from a defender's point of view how on earth you're meant to keep, of course, Alex Morgan under wraps. We touched on that 13-0 win over Thailand. We're going to do that in a bit more depth in just a moment. They've been called rude for celebrating, and also that Thai keeper was 5'5". Some people are suggesting the goals need to get a bit smaller.
This is Love Sport.
There's nothing quite like scoring a goal. Boys and girls around the country grow up thinking, oh, that feeling of when the ball hits the back of the net is quite something. You're elated and you should celebrate. Should you still celebrate, Liliag, 13 goals later?
Again, as we touched upon earlier, I think it's a matter of opinion on who the goal scorer is. I think in the situation, obviously, with USA, they showed their, courteous side after the game. And that's kind of, what happens on the pitch is on the pitch. And what happens after, happens after. But it's difficult. I think some people, like I said, don't really care if they score. But at the same time, it's a World Cup. Not every day, you dream to score at a World Cup, don't you? So I think you have to show respect. But at the same time, it's a game. It's competitive. If you want to celebrate, you have every right to celebrate. If you also feel quite, not ashamed, but if you want to kind of take a step back and just kind of walk back and, understand it's 13-0 and you start to maybe feel for the other team, then also that's not a problem. But
is it not a bit disrespectful? I mean, if we look at Megan Rapinoe's celebration, she makes it 9-0 and goes absolutely berserk. If I were one of those Thai players, I would be genuinely upset at that point.
Yeah, you would be gutted, but at the same time, it is football, and that's, like I said, the scores the other night with the Germany men, they beat Estonia 8-0, and they were still, quite celebrating and things like that. So, yeah, it's one of them.
I think no matter, it's 9-0, whether the opposition are celebrating or not when you're 9-0 down, you're gutted either way.
Yeah, you're not going to be cheering.
I would celebrate if I was a footballer. Like, maybe that makes me a horrible person, according to some, but I think I would. Like we said, it's a World Cup. These players have worked their lives to get there. Scoring at a World Cup is their dream. If you want to celebrate, as Ali said, you do have every single right to. Maybe, maybe backflips aren't appropriate. Maybe, the real out there celebrations. Maybe tone it down a bit. But for some of those players, Mallory Pugh with her first World Cup goal, that's the moment of a lifetime for her. Let her have it.
Yeah, agreed. And like I said, the other side of it was you saw, they were really trying to set up Carly Lloyd. And the point of that is that might be her last World Cup. She, she goes down in history as it is for being one of, the best players ever for USA. And actually, they were so keen to get her on the score sheet as well. So they had every right then, like I said, when she finally got her goal, look how she celebrated. And that's not just a personal achievement for her, but again, as a team, maybe at her last World Cup, she wants to make it a successful one. Like I said, they've now got history as well, winning 13-0. So, yeah, it is difficult. It's a strong argument, but I think, down to the player. If you want to celebrate and score, you've got every right to do so.
Yeah, that is, of course, now the record win in a Women's World Cup. You mentioned the celebrating there, Ella, that if you scored a goal in any context, you would celebrate. Well, if I could backflip, I would backflip in any context. I wouldn't need to score a goal. It'd be, balls in play, 43 minutes in, just backflip on the centre circle.
I had you down as someone who could do triple backflips already, Johnny.
I think that shows that you don't know me very well yet, Lily, I suspect. Do you think that the 13-0 battering, and it is a battering, is bad for women's football? Because we see men who want to go, the standard is too low. Not potentially the best advert for a competitive World Cup.
No, it's not. I was actually out at the time this game was on, and a friend of mine tapped me on the shoulder and said, look at this, it's 13-0. And I sort of put my head in my hands because I knew exactly what I was going to see when I logged onto Twitter to see those goals. I knew exactly what the reaction was going to be from the anti-women's football brigade who have shouted up more than enough this week.
There was a quicker word for them, by the way, but we're not allowed to say it on air.
Yeah, horrible people. Anyway, yeah, I knew exactly what they were going to say, and yeah, it does show the gulf in women's football, but across the globe with the likes of the USA who have been dominant for so long, and the likes of Thailand who are miles below in the rankings. But obviously, we know that women's football is on its separate journey, and we need to let some of these nations have their own cycle. But yeah, it isn't a good reflection of the women's game, but you can't really say it's these Thai players' fault in the country that they have played football in and the lack of facilities.
Yeah, they did their best. Absolutely. One argument that's coming out of this is about the size of the goals. The Thai goalkeeper is 5'5". Various people have suggested that in women's football, the goals are too big. They should be made smaller relative to the average height of a woman as against a man.
Yeah, I mean, again, everything is a matter of opinion. So some are going to say, you know, what ridiculous, you know, no, we're all equal. But then at the same time, the other argument that you can say is actually what compares, you know, what the difference is between women's football and men's football, I guess for me is genetics. Yes, they are stronger than us. Yes, they are quicker than us. And that's nothing that training can do. That's a case of pure genetics. They have bigger hands. They have the majority bigger feet. That is how that is. So when you look at stats in terms of physical capabilities, actually, it's probably not a silly question to say, actually, should we now have smaller goals? And if you think of it, you know, like you said, she's 5'5". Some of the men, the probably smallest goalkeeper, like I said, to get into a men's team, they often say straight away, how tall are you?
How tall is your dad?
And that's exactly, and like, question. Yeah, exactly that. So in terms of that, it's not. But if you to say it straight away, I think the defensive mechanism of women would say, no, we don't need smaller goals. Of course we don't.
Well, the interesting thing about this is we're seeing it divide very high profile women in the game. So for example, former US goalkeeper Hope Solo has come out and said, this is a sexist suggestion. I think it's outrageous and it is sexist to even suggest it. Emma Hayes, meanwhile, coach of Chelsea ladies, has been more receptive and said, you know what, I think maybe the goals are a bit too big. Women's football journalist Harriet Dredge was speaking on Love Sport earlier to Bell and Sperling. She believes pitches need to be adapted to the women's game.
You know, when you look at the facts, the average height of females is, you know, shorter than men, mm-hmm. and especially of goalkeepers, you know, a few inches shorter than the average male goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And, you know, pitches have been made for men for all eternity. You know, and we have to have a look at this seriously and think, you know, if we want the game to improve and to develop, then we need to be looking at this kind of thing seriously and making sure that it's suitable for female athletes at the top of their game.
I think there is a point about fact here, because there are lots of people being sexist about women's football at the moment in terms of the quality of the players and not having any reasonable argument. But with this, where you can point to an objective measure of an average height, does it not just make more sense to shrink the goals? Or are we accepting that actually men's football and women's football are different sports? The goal is bigger relatively in women's football, so you get more goals, arguably more entertaining.
I think, yeah, the facts do support the argument that maybe we should shrink the goals in women's football, but I disagree with it. I think maybe on a professional level that can work with the clubs that have got the facilities and the infrastructure to actually have these goals and make these changes to the women's game. But if you look at it at a grassroots level, I completely agree with what Claire Rafferty said and how it could become a barrier to entry. Imagine you're a young women's team, you know, under 12s, under 13s. You've gone to hire a pitch and they've gone, oh, sorry, we don't have any women's goals for you. Hmm. So you're training in a men's size goal, then you go and play in a women's size goal. It's hard to get used to. And
every shot's going 10 centimetres wide to the right.
Exactly. And not given the progress we have in women's football, I can't see that being, you know, a smooth change and suddenly we'll everything will work and we'll have the same size goal everywhere. Another question is, how much do you shrink it by? There are still some tall women out there.
Mm.
So it's a really difficult one. I agree with Claire Rafferty, her response to Emma Hayes' comments where she said it can become a barrier to entry. And of course, there's the other arguments that it lends itself to the criticism that women's football is just not as good.
Mm. I think that's a really good point. Lily, you are, of course, a goal scorer. That's what you do. That's your job. If you turn up for a game and you're looking at the opposition team as they warm up and their keeper is 5'5", as this lady from Thailand was, are you licking your lips? Because if I turned up for a Sunday league game and the keeper was 5'5", anywhere within 30 yards, frankly, I'm just having a go.
I mean, agreed. I'm probably someone who would shoot from, you know, anywhere in the opposing half anyway.
Just play crossbar challenge.
Let alone if I saw, you know, like you said, a smaller goalkeeper. And it's difficult, isn't it? I think, like you said, with the goals, the argument definitely is about grassroots. And you know, are they going to be accessible? What even is then a woman-sized goal? Who makes that decision? And I think overall, when you think about it going forward, with all respect, there's going to be people that then will still slate women's goalkeepers, and there's going to be, you know, mistakes happen in smaller goals as well. And it's the same in any football. There's, you know, I saw on Twitter recently, I think I retweeted it, a man, you know, goalkeeper, and he let the ball roll under his foot. And I think the sarcasm on the tweet was something like, gosh, you know, these men's footballers, and they want and they want equal pay. And it's true, because we're human. We make mistakes, whether we are female or male. So, yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah, I think instead of talking about, you know, how much we're going to shrink a goal by, we need to focus on improving the goalkeeping coaching in the women's game. Mm. We've had professionals come out and say, we never had a proper goalkeeping coaching. I think that's what we need to focus on first before we start deciding what size a women's goal should be.
Yeah, absolutely. Just as a final note on that game, it's time for a consistent feature for us here on the World Cup show, Golden Boot Watch. Who is in the lead? Alex Morgan, quite clearly. She scored 5 in her first game, past, of course, poor Sukanya Chorcharanying. Is she nailed on?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a... Before, like I said, before the World Cup began, I looked at, you know, who was favourite for Golden Boot, and you looked at the odds and you saw Mida Maher and Sam Kerr and Alex Morgan was shorter odds. And I thought, God, that's weird. Why? You know, she's a great player, don't get me wrong, but I was thinking they're in great form. Mm. You know, some of the... And then now the answer is clear.
Thailand.
Thailand was the answer. So, I mean, 5 goals is unbelievable, isn't it, really?
That was enough to win the Golden Boot in 2011.
Exactly that. So she's, I can't even say halfway there, is she? She's 99.9% there, I'm going to say.
Yeah, the odds are definitely in her favour, aren't they? Like, Kane in the Men's World Cup got it of 6 last year, and she's got that in one game with the US likely to go very far. The interesting thing is, I think it's Abby Wambach in the first Women's World Cup scored a tournament high of 10 goals, I believe. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see whether she can break that. She's only got to double her tally with, well, who knows how many games we've got left, but you'd expect the USA to go far.
Well, what Alex Morgan's got to pray is that Thailand get out of the group as well. They meet them again in the final.
She and might go for the 6.
Yeah, she scores 50.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and, of course, women's football expert Ella German and Lily Ag, Charlton Athletic goal machine. It's been a fantastic tournament so far. Great to watch, exciting, and yet we still have a bastion of men being morons on Twitter.
It looks like it's never going to stop. I don't know what the women's game can do to change their opinion. Lily and I were talking about this before we came in. You see so much of it on Twitter, and it just gets to the point now where it's becoming just laughable and a bit embarrassing. I don't think anyone on the women's side of the game, whether it's players, ex-players, fans, no one is saying, oh yeah, but we'd beat you, the men, you know, we're so much better than you. No one is saying that. We just want people to appreciate women's football for the spectacle it is. But we've got so many men coming back and saying, oh, but if we put a team together, we'd definitely beat you. It's like, well, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the World Cup. Just
also not necessarily
football.
True.
Not necessarily. Depends who you have on the pitch. So yeah, it's just, I just don't get this sort of inferiority complex that some people have, this insecurity that makes them want to pipe up all the time.
Do you think it is insecurity, Lynn?
It's a mix, to be honest. I think, you know, I live for Twitter when the women's football's on. I scroll through, and some of the things I see, they crack me up, and they're also, you know, half the time when you look and you see the comment and, oh, get back in their kitchen or go iron or whatever it is, and you look at the profile picture and, you know, it's an egg. It's not, they haven't even got a profile picture. I think, like I said at the minute, they're threatened almost by the fact that actually women are becoming, you know, in power, and actually it's a great World Cup and women's football's being spoken about. And I don't understand. There are however many other channels, if it really upsets you that much, the amount of people that have Sky and Now TV and Netflix, watch something else. Don't watch it. Don't comment. Like I said, you don't have to be unkind. You don't have to acknowledge it for what it is. Move on. Get over it.
Yeah, that's one thing that really frustrates me, is there's hundreds and hundreds of tweets out there saying, oh, for God's sake, women's football is being you know, forced upon us. And I think, well, no, it's not. It's on if you want to watch it. You know, Love Island's on at 9 every night and it's all over Twitter from 9 to 10. It doesn't mean you have to tune in. EastEnders is on every night. It doesn't mean you have to watch that as well. It's still your choice. I think just because it hasn't been reported on regularly before, suddenly it's apparently being forced on everyone's throats when actually it's just normal media coverage for a World Cup.
What's the solution? How is there any way of stopping these people doing this, educating them?
I think, you know, until these, I think one is people need to grow up. These are probably men that have, you know, children, and or one day they might have a young girl. What are they going to do when their child says, "Dad, I saw Steph Houghton the other day on the screen. I want to be a footballer." And they know that they're one of them idiots that then tweet and say, "Oh, get in the kit." You know, what are they going to say? "Sorry, daughter, you can't play football. It's a man's game and you're going to do the ironing and kick." What planet are they on? It baffles me. It really does.
There was one tweet that really shocked me with a dad saying, "Oh, my daughter plays for a team, but I went along to watch and I wasn't impressed. It was rubbish." And I thought, that poor girl, imagine what you think if your dad's was tweeting that.
That's... Do you reckon he does that about every part of her life, though, not just the football? Do you reckon he gives her a violin and first lesson he goes, "Oh, God, you're awful. My ears."
It's an impression, isn't it, straight away? I remember, you know, when I was 5, I think I started playing football, and I remember my mum rung up and said, "Hi, you know, I want to bring them down to play football," and he was like, "Oh yeah, great, you know, how old is he?" And she was like, "Oh, you know, it's a girl," and they were a bit like, "Oh, okay," so this is for, you know, Eastbourne Borough back in the day, and so they said, "Okay, yeah, bring her down, we'll see." So I got brought down. They had an A team, a B team, a C team. And at the time, I just, you know, didn't really know, but I just wanted to play football. I got straight away shoved into the sea because I was a girl. And luckily for me, by the end of that lesson, I was in the A team. And then from there, you know, they changed their opinion. And
so you played for a boys' team growing up?
I played for boys from the age of 5 until I think I was, you get banned. I think it was age 12. And, you know, when I look back, and I think the boys that I played with will agree, you know, I played with players that went on to play for Crystal Palace, Brighton.
Who are we talking about?
So a boy now currently plays Solly March.
Oh, yeah.
For Brighton, you know, at the time as well.
I made my fantasy team.
And he was a small boy.
He's not a big man.
He's not. But even then, he was tiny. And at the same time, that was the argument. So, you know, he wouldn't have stood out. And then he's now gone on and to be that good. And yet, when I think back in the day, I was one of the top goal scorers in that team, if not the top goal scorer.
Well, this is the thing. And there's a really interesting point there about technical ability, because with the women's game, when these men are judging it as against the men's game, which I know, Ella, you are sure correctly that is an exercise in absolute idiocy, the technique is easily as good as the men. And actually, back when you're playing with Solly March, who's now a Premier League footballer, before puberty and men suddenly getting stronger and so on, you were as good, if not better?
Yeah, I completely agree. And like I said, I played, I think, Brighton, you know, centre of excellence for the girls, come in for me at the time. And the manager didn't tell me of the team because he wanted me to play for his team a bit longer. So I think that summed up within the team, you know, that I was not bad at all. I think, like I said, technical ability for me, I mean, I watch some women's teams now and I think personally sometimes, oh, maybe your technique, you know, isn't as great. But at the same time, then I look others and I think, wow, what technique from, you know, left foot, right foot. So it's a matter of opinion. Some men's players can't get the corner past the first person. Agreed. Some women don't sometimes, but it's technique upon, you know, different people. So you can't just blame all women, no technique.
No.
All women, useless football. No.
I think a big problem is so many people are judging women's football on isolated incidents that they aren't actually watching the game. They're scrolling through Twitter. They see media outlets tweeting out Renard's own goal, which was very, very poor.
They've not seen her 2 thumping headers in the game before, for example.
Exactly. An example to compare it with is Lukaku the other night playing for Belgium managed to somehow block his own shot about 3 yards out from goal. But in that game, he also scored 2 goals. So you can't judge someone just on one incident. I've been to loads of women's football games. Some have been great, some have been terrible. Exactly the same applies to the men's game. I've been to some fantastic games, some terrible ones. Look at the Champions League semi-finals compared to the final, for example. So I think we can't just look at one thing and go, oh God, the women's game's terrible because they scored an own goal, because there's so much out there that you haven't necessarily seen.
I think, you know, football fans are the best, aren't they? They really are. I think it's, you know, we're very fickle. You have people saying, oh, you know, if for example you support Arsenal and they've just lost, oh, the worst team, what's he doing? £360,000 a week, he's useless, da da da. Next week he scores a tap in, oh, he's the best player ever, let's never let him go, he's unbelievable. And you see it, and it's literally the same people on Twitter with just an opinion, and they just write down, and it's like, you don't really even understand football, you know. So it's very interesting. I just like I said, I try and ignore. I find a few funny. I give them a little like. In terms of, like I said, the Lukaku incident the other night, he did block his own shot. It was funny, and you know the caption on it. And like I said, they get some, you know, grief sometimes saying 75 million question marks. And I, you know, even I could score this. So it's going to be there always in football, whether it's women or men, I think.
And of course, England are in action tonight against Argentina. The ground is filling up nicely in Le Havre. And coming up, a preview of that game. We'll have some team news. Can England do it?
This is Love Sport.
We're 13 minutes away from England being in action in their second game of the Women's World Cup in France. It's England versus Argentina, and Phil Neville says England will have to be at their very best tactically and mentally to get something out of this game.
We've got to defend well, we've got to concentrate well, we've got to sustain attacks well, and we've got to make sure that when the players in the final third get the ball, they've got they're relaxed and they're free to express themselves.
Well, Neville has picked his team. He's gone for Telford, Bronze, Greenwood, Houghton, Paris, Scott, Taylor, Kirby, McManus, Moore and Mead. Has he got it right?
Good question. Wait and see. I wasn't expecting as many changes as we have here. But that said, playing Argentina in the group is probably the best opportunity to make some switches. So I think the one I'm most surprised about in a way is starting Jodie Taylor up front. Okay, she won the Golden Boot at Euro 2017, but she hasn't scored for England in 2 years. She hasn't scored out in the American League barely this season either. So it's a bit of a weird one to play a striker who looks quite shot of confidence when we had Ellen White causing such a problem against Scotland last week. So yeah, it's a difficult one, but I think, you know, Phil said he knows what he's doing. He knows who he's going to play in each of his group games. So I guess the football will do the talking in the next hour or so.
Yeah, again, like I said, I think I wouldn't have expected so many changes. But again, I thought that from the Scotland game earlier, I was surprised at what Shelley Kerr picked for her team. So the managers, you'd like to think, know what they're doing. They know kind of the vibes in camp and who might be struggling, who might feel tired, who might feel fresh. So all of those things, like you said, I think Bright picked up a bit of a knock last game, so maybe that's precautionary as to why he's resting her. Walsh, I know, ran an awful lot, so maybe again he just wants to put more in for a bit more security and a bit more experience. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to tonight.
I think the Lionesses are feeling confident. Stokes has said that they know exactly what to expect from their Argentine opponents.
They're determined, they're a very proud country, so I think they're going to bring that. So I think we'll obviously, you know, watch out for that. But again, it's just focusing on us and, you know, what England can do.
People who are watching this World Cup with a background in men's football will look at this fixture and all of the history that England versus Argentina in the men's game has and the quality that we expect from Argentina and assume that it's a really tough one. Do you think Argentina's women will feel the pressure of Messi, of Maradona on their shoulders?
No, I don't think they will. I think, in fact, they will probably feel less pressure tonight. Again, there's no expectation on them. All expectation is on England to get another win in the group. Argentina picked up their first ever World Cup point very well against Japan last week. So I don't think so. I think they're two isolated teams, to be honest. I think they'll be going into this game with the benefit of being the underdog and enjoying that the pressure's on England to perform.
Absolutely. Is it a struggle for England to have all that pressure on them?
No, it's their job, isn't it? You know, they know going into any game, whether it's in the Super League or, you know, you're going to have pressure, you're going to have high expectations, and that's what they want now. They want to be seen as a threat to other teams. So I don't think, you know, you can say that. And I think, like I said, some people might thrive on the pressure, others might not, but they're international athletes now. So regardless of the press and the grief that they might get, they need to then, like I said, take it under their wing and just give a normal performance and kind of not feel that pressure.
And Lily, I know that you know some members of this England team quite well. Is there anyone in particular who you've played with or against who you can give us an insight into?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few, isn't there? I played with Steph back at Arsenal when I was younger, and like you said, she's come on leaps and bounds since then, and she's really kind of had a great, you know, great Euros before, and now is kind of the face of England and kind of leads the team really well. Frank Kirby, I remember for years playing against her, and every team talk leading into the game was Frank Kirby, the one on the left, you know, cuts in. All team talks were about her because of what a great player she is. And
how are Argentina going to try and handle her?
I think it's a difficult one, isn't it? I think you saw from Argentina the other day that they are going to be going into every single challenge. They're going to be putting bodies on the line. They're going to be organised. They're going to get back in. And they want it. They're going to take great belief from the Japan game and getting a point there. And actually, if they can get a point for Japan, why can they not get a point for England? And I think that will be their team talk. That will be their attitude. And I expect to see challenges flying in. I expect to see grit and determination. And if England, you know, are a bit complacent, like we were second half v Scotland, then they're going to make it a tough game. So it's going to be interesting, but hopefully, you know, we can take our chances that we're going to get.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Argentina are going to try and unrattle England a bit at the start. I think England maybe have the danger of being a bit complacent going into this game, albeit less so after Argentina did hold Japan to a draw, which, exactly as Lily said, is a remarkable achievement for a team that have never, had at that point, had never picked up a point at a World Cup and managed to hold last year's runner-up to a draw. That's pretty impressive. So I think, yeah, they're going to go out all guns blazing, just trying to shock England, who we know can start games a little bit on the jittery side. They're going to try and capitalise upon that, I think.
In terms of our conversation, all of this has been grounded in the expectation that England are going to win tonight. Is there any possibility that Argentina could get all 3 points?
Of course, or is it football? Anything can happen. Like I said, it's that's as it is. There could be VAR could have a big say tonight, the officiating. Some players might score a screamer. Some players might score an own goal and have a howler. That's the excitement of football. So until we watch the game, we're not going to know. But I think, like I said, they need to go into the game. They need to be ruthless. They can't be complacent. They need to go out. They can't have the attitude like they did second half and keep the ball, and they need to play exciting football. That's when we are at our best. If we sit off, keep the ball and hope for a chance, then Argentina will get behind the ball and they might counter and they might get their chance. So we need to just, like I said, play our best football, play attacking, get some goals, and then maybe they can start to pass backwards and keep the ball. But for me, they need to go all out.
Absolutely. And we're watching the build-up to the game now, and the BBC's punditry team is fairly female-heavy. It's being led by Gabby Logan. Alex Scott's in the mix. Dion Dublin is there as well. But, of course, earlier in the week, they went for an all-female panel. It was Logan Hope Solo, the former US goalkeeper Gemma Fay, and Alex Scott. And Rebecca Vardy, wife of Jamie Vardy, has gone off on one. Said, whatever happened to equality? You think, whatever happened to understanding how equality works and redressing balance works, Rebecca? Where's she coming from? Has she got a point?
I think it's a ridiculous comment to make. I don't really know what she was trying to achieve. Later on, she went back on her comments and said, oh no, I meant it in a good way.
But after her agent texted her and told her, yeah, it was a really bad look.
It was ridiculous. I don't know what she's talking about. I think, well, when it comes to punditry, what we should be looking at is ability, not gender. The same applies whether we're in the women's game or the men's game. And if it so happens that the best people to talk about women's football at the moment are women, then so be it. For a long period of time, the best people to talk about men's football were men, until the dynamics started to change and we had the likes of, you know, Gabby Logan for a long while, but more particularly the likes of Alex Scott and Eni Aluko coming in. You know, we were talking about this earlier. I've watched hundreds of football games on TV in my life, and the percentage of those that have been led by all-male panels are still definitely in the 90%, probably higher than that. So, yeah, it was a ridiculous comment to make.
And there's actually quite literally zero argument, zero factual, logical argument for women being less good football pundits than men, right? When we're talking about players, there is, as Lily's pointed out, the genetic element that men are on average taller, faster, and so on. But actually, there is nothing inherent about a man or a woman that enables them to understand football. So surely nonsense.
Yeah, completely agree. Like I said, I think it's a ludicrous comment. It really is. It's one, not kind. It makes no sense to say. And two, it has no relevance in the sense that, you know, has Rebecca, with all respect, ever watched women's football? Does she understand? You know,
she done anything?
How agreed? you know, do for example, if there's, you know, men out there that know the women's game, they know these players and have stats, then fair enough, they can come on. That we wouldn't even argue that. The point of it probably is, and the thought behind it is actually, it's Women's World Cup. We've got Hope Solo, who's been at World Cups. We've got Alex Scott, who's been here.
They're more
who
qualified.
Who knows the players? That's the logic behind it. Not a case of it's a male and it's a female. It's a case of, we're talking about women's football. They know their stuff. That's the lineup for tonight. It shouldn't even be a discussion. I think it's pathetic, to be honest.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking about women's football. We're going to keep doing it, but we're coming to the end of this week's show, and I need to press you both for a score prediction. What are we saying?
I'm going to go 2-0 England.
2-0 England against Argentina. Ella?
I'm going to go more optimistic, 3-0.
3-0. I'm going to go 12-0 because we're not quite America, but we're nearly there. You'll have to join us next week when we'll look back, hopefully, on a glorious Lionesses win.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.